I'd like now to welcome Dr. Betty Korber. She is a biologist, laboratory fellow at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and an external professor at the Santa Fe Institute. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. When we talk about HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, I thought it might be good to start off for our listeners just asking you, what is a virus?
What a virus is something that can't live independently, and so it has to infect a cell of another organism, and then it takes over that cell, and it uses that cell to reproduce itself, and that's how viruses survive and expand inside of a body.
Does it have its own DNA?
The virus that I study the most is HIV, and it's called a retrovirus because it uses RNA instead of DNA. So what it does is it binds to its target cell, and then it fuses with it, and it dumps its RNA into that cell, and it gets reverse copied. So that's why it's a retrovirus, because it goes backwards from RNA to DNA. And then the viral DNA gets put into the cellular DNA, so it gets integrated into our DNA, and it turns the cell that it's infected into a viral-producing factory, essentially. So it just starts dumping a lot of virus, or it can just sit and wait quietly and start expressing itself later. But it really becomes part of our DNA, and then it turns that cell into something that makes many more viruses.
So how does the body's immune system normally deal with viruses?
It has a couple of different mechanisms, and so there's something called innate immunity, and that just means it's got, there are certain triggers that when we get an infection, either a bacteria or a virus, that stimulate immune responses that are just sort of general. But we also have something called immune memory, and we make very specific viruses for something we've seen before. So if you've had...
We make specific viruses?
We make specific immune responses to a virus we've seen before. So, for example, if you had influenza this year, you might make a very good immune response to it, and then you'd save some of those cells. And so the next time you got infected, you'd have immune memory.
And are those what we call antibodies?
The cells make the antibodies. So the cells that are stimulated by seeing something foreign that isn't us make antibodies, and that's part of the immune system. Or there's also these things called killer T cells, and those recognize a cell that's been infected by a virus, and they can cause that cell to explode and get rid of it, which you want to do, because once the cell's been infected, it just turns into this thing that makes more viruses, so you want to get rid of those.
So T cells actually cause infected cells to blow up?
They do, yeah. It's like a war zone.
Really?
Yeah, and it's happening all the time in us. And so we have actually a couple of different kinds of T cells, but cytotoxic or killer T cells are the ones that will recognize a virally infected cell because it's not us. It has viral proteins on its surface, and it'll say, ah, this guy's foreign. Got to kill it. So then it will send out signals that cause the cell to virtually explode and stop making viruses.
When you think about the human immune deficiency, human immune system, do you ever think about the metaphor of that as it relates to human society?
I think about it some, but not too much. I usually think about it as the immune system.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing to think about, though, because it really is able to differentiate us from, you know, thousands of different millions of different pathogens and things that aren't us that we need to be able to eliminate and keep out of our bodies. And it is able to recognize those things and get rid of them usually. There's another part of the immune system called helper T cells, and those are the cells that wake up when they see something foreign and something that isn't us. And they send out all sorts of signals to trigger the cells that make antibodies or to trigger these killer T cells to go on the attack and take out the thing that's invaded our system.
So T cells, of course, are something that is often talked about when you talk about HIV, because the virus HIV attacks the T cells. Is that correct, or it makes them work so hard that, I mean, what happens?
It does attack the T cells. So viruses usually have one kind of cell that they're able to recognize and get into. They have a protein on their surface that is a receptor that binds to that cell, and then it is able to get into that cell. And it just so happens that the cell that the HIV virus is able to infect is an immune cell, and it's those helper T cells. It's kind of the cell that conducts the rest of the immune response.
Which is why HIV is so dangerous.
Right, and why it hurts your immune system. And so what happens when you get HIV is you get a lot of these helper T cells infected, and they're the things that have to orchestrate the rest of the immune response. And so You do okay for a while, and you're able to mount good immune responses for some years after you've been infected, but meanwhile, the virus is sort of wearing away at your immune system, and it's getting less and less effective. So if you die of AIDS, you eventually die of opportunistic infections, they're called. They're the other kinds of infections that get into your body that your body can't fight anymore because HIV is so damaged to your immune system.
So your talk is titled Trying to Make a Vaccine Against the Moving Target, HIV and Its Diversity. What do you mean by diversity?
What I mean by that is that HIV evolves really rapidly. And so if you were to take the virus out of two different people that were infected, they would have quite different viruses. It mutates really quickly. And part of why that happens is because you're infected for a long time. You never really clear the virus after you've been infected. So you may be infected for 8 or 10 years, and you're making immune responses against HIV, and HIV is escaping those immune responses in your body all the time. So it gets...
Because it's mutating so much.
Yes, and right. And because you've got these antibodies or T cells that are killing the virus, so the virus tries to become something different, slightly different, so it's able to evade those immune responses. So it's continuously evolving in each person a little bit, and every person sort of has a different immune response, so it evolves in different ways in different people. And so if you were to line up the DNA... from the viruses from different individuals, that would maybe be 10 or 12% different. In one country, maybe up to 35% different if you were to look at it globally.
We're talking to Dr. Betty Korber, who will be tonight speaking at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Annex in the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers, trying to make a vaccine against a moving target. So that makes it really hard to make a vaccine for a virus that doesn't mutate so quickly. How do you make a vaccine?
Well, usually the way people have made vaccines in the past is they'll get the virus out, and they'll either do something called attenuating it, which is making it so weak that it's no longer makes you sick, and then you can get that and you make an immune response to that, and you have that beautiful immune memory. So once you've seen something, when you see it again, you can respond very fast and very effectively. So they'll do that, or they might take a single protein out of a virus and just put that little part of it into something called a vector, which is something that carries that protein in the vaccine. So it's a safe thing that doesn't hurt you, but it has either a bit of the virus or an attenuated virus, and you make a good immune response to that. You have all the memory cells, so then when you see the real thing, you become infected. Your immune system can respond very quickly and very potently. And so if the virus isn't variable, you just use one of them, and you make an immune response, and then it's able to cross-recognize other of its kind. Whereas with HIV, because it's so variable, that can really be an obstacle.
And it certainly is, and I want to get back to that in a second. But let's talk for a moment about the there's no vaccine at this point for HIV, but there are treatments. How do those treatments work, the so-called cocktail that people drink?
Well, they actually don't.
They take.
The cocktail, it's called a cocktail because it's actually a few things mixed
right.
up. So you have to take more than one drug at a time, and that's because HIV evolves so fast, actually. If you just take one drug, the virus will mutate away from that drug very quickly, and you'll become resistant to that drug. But if you take three drugs or four drugs, the virus can't mutate against all of those at once, and so you're able to hold the virus in check and able to live a much longer, healthier life. So what those do is they are very specific to parts of the virus that the virus needs to function. Like, remember I said HIV is an RNA virus, and it has to take that RNA and go to DNA before it can become a provirus and part of our cellular DNA. So that step, RNA to DNA, requires an enzyme that the virus carries with it called reverse transcriptase. And so you could, say, have a drug that binds to the part of the virus that turns RNA to DNA, and it blocks that from happening.
Uh-huh.
So you could have something like that, or the virus has proteins that have to be chopped up into smaller proteins using something called a protease. So you could have a drug that binds to the protease and inhibits its ability to chop up those proteins, and then HIV can't be functional. So that's what those drugs do, and it took us actually a long time to get to those, too. It wasn't really until 1996, 1997 that we had effective drugs for HIV, but it was discovered in 1981, so it took a while to get there.
Do those drugs work for virtually everybody who takes them?
Well, they Sometimes they have side effects that are hard for some people and not so hard for other people, so some people don't tolerate them very well. And some people develop drug resistance. So say you're given these three drugs, but you just want to not take them for a few weeks or a few months. You can develop drug resistance if you do that. Or if you don't take them very regularly, you don't take them every day, you can develop drug resistance.
So you actually have to take them every day in order for them to work.
You really do. You need to take them every day. Otherwise, your virus is going to maybe be able to evolve away from them being effective. And you become a carrier of drug-resistant virus. And some people are now carrying drug-resistant virus and can even transmit that to other people. So you can check for those mutations in the viral DNA, and you can say, oh, this person has a mutation that's going to make this drug not effective, so we're going to try to give them a different one. So the doctors try to, you know, figure that out, but people can develop drug resistance, and it can be really a problem trying to get the right drug combination to help them survive.
So in terms of this very diverse, quickly mutating HIV virus, where does science stand? Where do you stand in the quest for making a virus, a vaccine?
Well, I think a vaccine's incredibly important. So the therapy is wonderful, and it's really helped a lot of people, you know, live good long lives and feel much better for the life that they have. But they're very expensive. It's not just one drug. It's three drugs. It's for your life. It's a lifetime that you have to do it because you don't clear the virus. The virus wakes up in you if you stop taking the drugs. So the world can't afford this, and there's 40 million people infected with HIV right now. There's very poor nations that have, you know, 25% of their population infected, and these people can't afford...
Places in Africa, for example.
Yes, yeah. So Botswana and South Africa have really very high infection rates,
and they're the least able to afford the drugs.
Right. And in China, for example, once you have AIDS, you're given drugs, but you can't have drugs until you get AIDS. And maybe they could prolong your life before you have AIDS if you didn't have to wait until that moment.
Just if you knew you were HIV positive.
Yeah, because they're so expensive. So the expense of the drugs really make it a problem. In fact, it's a lifetime commitment. The fact that you evolve resistance. And the thing about a vaccine is if we can finally figure out how to develop an effective vaccine, you give the vaccine maybe a couple shots and the person's protected for life, doesn't ever have to get HIV. It's a much better way to reach out to people who are in the developing world and give them something that can keep them from getting HIV in the first place. So, or if they do, HIV is kind of different than typically vaccines. Prevent you from getting infected. And with HIV, we may never be able to achieve that, but we might be able to achieve something where you mount such a good immune response when you first see the virus that you're able to control it yourself without having to take drugs, and maybe you're also less infectious. So that's a possible goal for an HIV vaccine that, if realized, would also be a great help.
But there are roadblocks on the way to getting a vaccine.
Right. HIV was first discovered as a virus in 1983, and it's 2007, and a lot of smart people have been thinking about this, and we don't have one yet. So, in fact, there was a recent trial that just ended from the company Merck that was people were really hopeful about, and it didn't turn out to be protective, and they stopped the trial. So it's a really challenging problem, and the diversity of HIV, I think, is maybe one of the greatest challenges, if not the greatest challenge for making an effective vaccine.
When Merck did these trials and a vaccine was tested, how do they? I mean, you can't obviously experiment on human beings. How did they get their results?
Well, it takes a lot of years to get a vaccine into trial. So what you do is you come up with a concept, and then you test that to see if it's sort of reasonable in vitro, which would maybe be in the cell culture or experimentally in terms of seeing if antibodies bind to your vaccine or that kind of thing. And if that all passes, you put it into small animals. So you would maybe put it into guinea pigs or mice or something like that.
Do guinea pigs and mice get HIV? They get AIDS?
They don't. So they're not a good model for protection. But you can see if your vaccine doesn't hurt them and is safe. And you can see if your vaccine is able to elicit a very good immune response. It's able to interact with a lot of different HIV viruses that you have growing in the laboratory. So you can't infect those animals, but you can check to see if they're making good, effective immune responses. And if it passes that test, now we're a couple years down the road, you put it into macaques, which are kind of monkey. That's the best animal model for HIV, and it's very expensive to do those tests. But you try your concept in macaques.
And these are monkeys that do get HIV?
Well, they get a cousin of HIV, so they get a simian virus that's like HIV, and they can get sick from it.
Uh-huh.
So you can test those animals to see if they get protected from infection or if they get protection from disease with your vaccine. But it's not a perfect model. It's got quite a few flaws. But nonetheless, it's the best. It's the only real model that we have that's not human. And you can also just see if the macaques make a good immune response and if they're making effective T cells and if they're making good antibodies. And they're, because they're primates and so are we, they're more like us. And so we're more likely to respond like they respond. So if all of that's a go and everything is looking like it's making sense and working well, you move into a very small human trial. And you make sure it's safe, and you make sure that people are making some immune response. So that would maybe be on the order of 30 people, something like that. This is called a phase one trial. And if that goes well, and nobody is getting sick or having problems with the vaccine, everybody seems safe, and they seem to be making good immune responses, you can start scaling up. And so Merck was in that scale-up phase. Everything had gone well so far, and there was some reason to believe that this might be helpful in people, but the only way to really know is to test it in people. So you have to go through all this preliminary stuff first.
And so what happened?
Well, what happened was it wasn't protective. So they gave the vaccine to quite a few people. They had in like the U.S. and the Caribbean, they were going to move the vaccine into African trials. And then they have midpoint checks to see, is the vaccine working? Is it helpful? Is it not helpful? And they did a midpoint check, and it just wasn't helpful, and so they stopped the trial. So
I would think that there would be a ethical problem, which is that if people know they're being tested for an HIV a vaccine, they might be more likely to have unprotected sex.
That's a real ethical issue, and people get intensely counseled who get enrolled in these vaccine programs. And, you know, you tell these people that you don't know that this is going to work. They might get placebo, so they might not even get the vaccine. But they're also really in an experimental system. They don't know that it's going to work, and they try to teach people about that. They also try to teach them about things like safe sex. So they're trying to reduce their risk, and that's all part of being enrolled in a vaccine trial. It's complex.
Well, unfortunately, it's time to go now, but I want to thank you, and there's much more to talk about. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte.